Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen. Hello.
Hi, Jen. Today, we have kind of a cool special episode. We are going to discuss and unpack one episode. Yeah. The season 6, episode 18, Milagro.
Yes, what an episode.
Oh, Jen, tell me all about your, I should say, relationship with this episode.
Yeah, relationship. It should be a sexy relationship since we're talking about Milagro, I suspect.
Yeah.
Actually, my relationship with Milagro was not at all sexy at the beginning. I don't know. I don't know if I just had like a cob on, as the Brits would say, for the entirety of season 6 or what my problem was. But I just remember vaguely thinking, this is weird. And not very X-File-y, and there was a lot of weird episodes in season 6 in varying ways. And I think I just had it with weird episodes at that point, and I didn't think much of it. And then I watched it again a couple of years ago for the first time in a while, probably since the first time I'd watched it. And I was like, wait a second, this is a really good episode and really interesting and really different.
Yeah.
But at that point, I felt like I was the only person who had figured that out because no one seemed to ever talk about it. But I feel like it's catching on. People are catching on to the awesomeness that is Milagro. What about you? What did you think when you first watched it?
Well, it's funny because I had a very similar reaction as you, and I know I loved season 6 for that very reason. I loved all the experimental episodes in season 6. That was one of my favorite things about it because I felt like week to week everything was different. And so I don't ever think I was repelled by this episode in any way, but I think I was like, I was intrigued by it, but I think it also made me a little uncomfortable. Weirdly, yeah. Because and I can appreciate it now. I think I have grown with this episode, but I think they have never done anything like that before.
Right.
Especially with regards to Scully. You don't see her character being portrayed that way or viewed that way. And I think I remember watching, and it's kind of weirdly, and I'm not just talking about like, I mean, maybe mostly I'm talking about, you know, like the sexual aspect of it, but like, it kind of reminded me of when I was like in college or in whenever it was, and I first stumbled upon fanfic, and I had kind of a very visceral reaction to it because I was like, wait, this is different. This is weird. And I think that's kind of how I reacted to this at first.
Yeah.
Over the years though, and I want to say very recently, I think you're right because I feel like I've been seeing a lot more chatter about it, which is really funny because it's so everybody's so late to the game on this. And forgive me if you have loved Milagro from the beginning. Forgive me.
Yeah.
No, not you, you beat
us to the punch,
you people out there. Yeah, but I there are things about it now that I appreciate so much more, I think, as an elderly person. No.
as an older person.
Yeah, an older person with, you know, some experience under my belt and some things behind me. You know what I mean? I feel like I can appreciate it in a different way now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe that's part of why I like it better now, too. Maybe it takes a certain wisdom of age to really appreciate Milagro. I don't know.
And a little bit of intelligence, I think, that I don't, like, I want to say emotional intelligence, but actual intelligence that I don't think I had at that time, that I have now. So I think that affected me as well. So
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, it's such a compelling episode in so many different ways and on so many different levels. On the level of kind of like intellectual intelligence, on the level of like the emotional stuff. And just, I mean, and then there's the whole sort of language of television, which is how it's shot, all that sort of thing. I'm not particularly fluent in that language, but all I know is it looks different to me than a typical episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels different. It's just got this kind of really nice sort of languid kind of pace to it, which is a little different than a typical X-Files episode.
Yeah, it's slow. It's a slow burn episode.
It is, which, but in a great way.
Yeah, because I think they do that on purpose because you're trying to kind of feel the discomfort and the build that Scully's feeling and like the kind of curiosity and. I think it's really effective. This is Kim Manners, correct? Directed this. It's directed really well. And the music too is so subtle, but like it's one of those. It's definitely one of those Mark Snow cues that I can remember. Like I can think of this episode and I can hear that kind of ticking clock drum pounding in the cold open. Like I can hear that. It's very haunting.
Yeah, I And I think that shows up kind of throughout the episode. I haven't quite figured out exactly how many times we get that kind of a little bit of a percussive kind of background,
right,
heartbeat kind of a sense. But I think if you listen carefully, it's actually there more often than you realize, more often than I realize, at least.
I am such an idiot. It is totally like a heartbeat.
Yeah. Are we just thinking of that now?
It didn't really occur to me. Again.
That's good. You know what? That's what the podcast is about.
Yeah.
Thinking about things in a new way.
You see that thing I was just saying about intelligence? That was just total bullshit. So... No, I'm serious. I didn't actually think about that. Like, to me, I was thinking more of like time passing like a clock, because I just thought of that. So, you know, the montage at the beginning of time passing and the light changing and him just sitting in the room and doing nothing but writing. Like,
Okay. But no, you know, it's both of those things, I think.
Yeah.
I have never thought of it that way, but there is reference to time passing and things like that as well.
But no, you're absolutely right. Definitely the heartbeat. And that's perfect.
Kind of. Yeah. And there's like a cello theme that's used throughout that is quite unusual for Mark Snow. I don't know if he ever, I think it's a cello. At least that's what it sounds like to me.
Mm.
And it's not an instrument that we hear from him hardly ever. I'm not sure if there's another episode where he uses it that way.
That's interesting.
And it's just really kind of like, sort of low and slow and intriguing, like everything about this episode. And everything is working together really well, I feel. I mean, it's written by three different people. I mean, I think the way they lay out the credits, it's described as story by John Scheiben and Frank Spotnitz, it's teleplay by Chris Carter, which, I mean, you can probably answer this better than I can. Does that mean that Chris Carter wrote the actual script?
Yeah.
But John and Frank kind of came up with it?
I could be wrong about this, but I think it's kind of like if Frank and John were like, hey, we have this cool idea. This is kind of what we want to do. And Chris was like, okay, give it to me. Let me make sure that this is the way I want it.
Yeah.
And he was kind of the last hands to touch it, I would say. That's probably
what that means. From what I can kind of gather from the X-Files, he pretty much did that with all episodes, but I'm guessing he must have done enough to this episode to actually warrant a credit for it.
Right.
So,
and you know what? I wanted to point out the idea that, like, you know, most Chris Carter like monologues just drive me up the wall. And
oh,
I mean,
you and me both.
I think everyone can probably agree with that. And I mean, the only one who can get away with it is Jillian when she's delivering it, because somehow she's able to sell it. But in this one, I'm just listening to it, and I'm just, even the stuff in the book. And I know it's supposed to be very, very over the top and very, very dramatic and very romantic. And I get that. But I'm listening to it, and I'm just like, oh, you can tell Chris Carter just had a field day with all this stuff.
Right? I feel like that was his contribution to the episode, was that he was allowed to go crazy with his sort of, you know, over the top florid style. Except I think, like, you know, it works in this case.
No, it totally does. It totally does.
That's it. You can just imagine that's how Padgett would write. And it seems to suit him.
You can justify it. And again, I have to bring up the whole idea of fan fiction, too, because that again, it was one of those other things that made me think of that. And when we get into how I feel about this entire episode and what I believe it means, I'll come back to that. But
interesting.
It was just such a strange direction for this show to take, and I appreciate
there's lots of interesting layers to this episode. I mean, more than I think some episodes have, to the writing and to everything that, you know, the visual language to it, which I think is one of the reasons why it's one of those episodes that I just literally never get tired of watching it, and my enjoyment of it does not diminish with repeated watchings. And I can't say that about every single episode. But that one I'm not one of these folks that watches the whole series all the way through every year. I kind of space out how often I watch episodes, because I'm always afraid that I'll get tired of them.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet, but I'm always afraid I might. But with this one, I mean, I watched it the last 2 days on successive days, so once each day, and I got stuff again the second time around. I don't know how many times I've watched that episode now.
Well, and
I always get something new from it.
Yeah, and I think this is definitely one of those that you almost want to look at it on the page, which is ironic because it's about writing. Like, especially some of that stuff at the end when Padgett and Nascimento were talking. Like, I think some of that stuff is so good, and
you don't
really absorb it all when you're watching.
Yeah,
so like,
no.
I mean, I had to go back in and look at the script and read it and be like, this stuff is really beautiful, and it goes by so quickly, and it's so meaningful that you don't quite catch it all in one watch. So.
Yep, that's the truth. That's true of a lot of scenes. It's a very, I think it's a really well-written episode.
This is one of those things that I have to point to whenever people give, and we'll talk about this later too, but whenever people give Chris Carter shit about hating MSR and not wanting that, I always point to this episode because I'm like, look, it's a little subtle, and maybe in places it's not so subtle, but it's like a love letter to the fans in a weird way and to these characters. Yeah. And I always have to point to that, and because Chris Carter wrote this episode, you know what I mean? And it's just, it's creepy and it's kind of weird and scary, but it has this underpinning of great MSR. You know what I mean? It's there.
Yeah. It's subtle, but it's there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that, it's interesting. I mean, I think that this episode meant a lot to all of the writers that were involved with it. Certainly I've heard, Frank Spotnitz talking about it. And Chris Carter has talked about it as well.
Frank shipped it hard.
He shipped it hard. I love Frank.
So did Kim Manners.
He's awesome. Yes. Oh, bless. He was so great. Yeah. Kim Manners had such a great way with those kind of character episodes.
Yeah.
He seemed to just bring out the best in all of the actors. Not that they needed to be any better, but I mean, how awesome is Jillian in this episode though? Let's just talk about that for a second.
Yeah, no. And this is, again, I would be curious to ask her if I ever had the opportunity. Maybe I will.
You might.
I have so few opportunities. I have to really decide what I would want to ask her, but I would be curious to I feel like I've read before, cause I know she loves Never Again. I know she really liked that script, and I have a feeling this is probably one of the ones that she really enjoyed too, because it's such a different thing to do. Yeah. It is. I mean, and I think, yeah, she's great in this. I love what I wanted to bring out about Jillian, particularly in this episode, was the scene where she's in the Padgett's apartment.
Mm-hmm. And pretty goody, yes.
Yeah, and that's probably, might be one of my favorite scenes in this whole episode. I just think it's so great because you can see, she doesn't even have to say anything, even though her deliveries are fantastic, but you can see it's like, she knows that she shouldn't be there.
Yeah, right.
But she wants to be there, but she doesn't know why she wants to be there.
Yeah.
And she's kind of on her guard, but at the same time she's letting it down. Like, and she's able to kind of get all of this contradictory stuff across just by the way her countenance, is that the right word?
Yeah.
The way she's just behaving, even without her line delivery. And I think that's so, again, it's so subtle. It might not be anything anybody would notice watching it, but I'm like, when I know Scully and I'm watching this episode, I know when she's acting different or unusual.
Yeah, and it,
again, bringing back that discomfort. Like, it's like you're not used to seeing her that way.
Absolutely, yes, because she's so sure of herself normally.
Right, and I mean, I think that's what's so unnerving, is she's not used to seeing herself that way, and that's the
whole absolutely.
Point of the episode, which is really brilliant.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think a lot of folks over the years have felt that Scully is acting out of character in this episode in a few cases. And the scene in Padgett's apartment that you mentioned is one of the examples they give. Scully would never do that.
See, and I don't agree with that at all.
Neither do I, but she's so drawn to Padgett in a way that we don't normally see. So I guess the thing that I've been mulling over is, what is it about him that's so intriguing to her? Did you find him intriguing as a character?
Yes. I don't think in the same way that Scully did, but I completely understand why. Like, again, it's what he says. It's he hits the nail on the head. He essentially says that, like, she's trying to get Mulder's attention, but doesn't realize it. Yeah. Here's this guy who sees her. You know, and it's unnerving. It's like, what is going on here? This person, he's creeping me out, but at the same time, he gets me, which is weird.
It's such a weird combination, right?
Yeah, I mean, it goes so far as to the point where she is like actually trying to convince herself and Mulder that the guy's not a killer. You know, like, she's like kind of defending him. And I guess I can see why people would think that's kind of out of character, but like, I don't believe that. And I feel like I can give her a pass because it's just a small snippet of time that we're seeing here. It's not like this is going on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right.
It's like she's completely thrown off of her guard and her walls are coming down, and she's behaving differently because she feels differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I think that Padgett is a very disarming fellow. I think he just, he has a way about him. Mm-hmm. I find him kind of sexy, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'll admit it.
It's He's creepy, intriguing. But it's like a gentle creepiness.
It's a gentle, sexy creepiness.
It's not like, it's not alpha male. It's it's not like this guy's going to attack me or assault me. It's not, it's like,
yeah.
you're almost like you're assaulting me with your mind, but I can handle that. Like, I see what you're saying. And he is, that shot of him on his bed, it was really funny. I was watching this last night with my husband, and I didn't remember this, but there's a shot of him like just laying on the bed. He's writing or he's smoking or something.
Yeah.
And I remember making a comment like, damn, look at his chest. Like, I didn't even remember that. I was like, the guy's pretty ripped.
He's pretty sexy. I mean, he's wearing this like really loose shirt through the whole episode pretty much, but then we see him shirtless and it's like, hello, what have we got going on here exactly?
Yeah I mean, not really my type from the neck up, but the neck down, not too shabby. So
I he's kind of my type actually, all the way around. I love that kind of intelligent kind of writerly type. Oh my goodness gracious.
I hear you, but when Mulder's in the room
he cannot compete with Mulder, that's for sure, when it comes to charisma and hotness. No, don't even bother. No one can, really.
No, it's true.
And one of the things I think that's interesting about Padgett that draws me to him, and probably Scully as well, he always seems so frank and open. Like, you never get the idea that he's bullshitting you. Mm-mm. He doesn't seem to be trying to talk around things.
Nope.
I mean, Mulder and Scully, of course, we know are the king and queen of talking around things.
Right.
Especially when it comes to emotions.
Yeah, to each other.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
But then we have Padgett come along, and he's so upfront in a very disarming way, in a very surprising way. I mean, it's not typical of sort of conversation with someone that you've just met, obviously, for them to be so sort of like open with you, seemingly so at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of intriguing. And I think Scully is kind of curious about him. She's just a naturally curious person.
Yeah.
Because, she's a scientist.
You're right.
And he's a curious guy. Like, he's an odd person. He's kind of intriguing. He's got no furniture. He's writing a book. He's slightly sexy. He's got this kind of odd manner about him. So he kind of draws you in a certain way. So I think she's drawn to him. And it's in the context as well, of course, of what's going on with her and Mulder at that moment. I don't think it's anything. I don't think she's mad at him particularly or having some kind of big fight with him. But I think there's a few hints throughout the episode that Mulder's taking her for granted a little bit.
Totally. Or she can be annoyed with him from here or there. And I feel it very much harkens back to Never Again in that way.
It's almost
like a sequel to that in a strange way. It's like anytime Mulder's kind of like not paying attention, she slips away. It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe Padgett's right about that whole, he's trying to get his attention. And maybe this is what he does. The old unconscious at work.
Right.
That she has a tendency to sort of be, a little bit drawn to other men when Mulder's not really paying attention to her. Because, I mean, he's kind of, not really paying a whole lot of attention to her. He's answering the door while he's brushing his teeth like that. It's the kind of thing. What else would you do when you've been, in close proximity with someone for like 6 years at that point? It's a perfectly normal kind of familiar relationship. But then you get this kind of odd fellow coming along who's so attentive, like creepily attentive.
Right.
But when you're used to being kind of ignored, that attentiveness can be kind of intriguing, I think.
Well, what I think is interesting too is the choice they made this time for the monster of the week to be this guy, but like the fact that he actually is living next door to Mulder, and he's in this apartment that's very, very similar to Mulder's. That very well may be Mulder's apartment redressed, as far as I know.
Yeah,
it's like this thing they keep doing over and over. It keeps cropping up. It's almost like this Mulder surrogate. They did this with Eddie Van Blunt. Small potatoes.
Right.
They did this and Never Again. It's just this the father figure thing. Just this whole thing just keeps happening. And I feel like it was just very, very, very obvious this time around.
To us, at least.
They didn't have to put him there. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he could have been, they'd never really explain why he left her neighborhood. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it made me think that he figured out essentially that she's over at Mulder's more than she is at her house, yeah, and was like, well, I got to get over here because this is where she is.
Yeah.
Which I think was kind of what he was saying. But yeah. But I just thought that was a kind of interesting choice. And it also gave us some great opportunities for like Paget and Mulder to have some really funny scenes.
Oh, man. Yeah. Like we were in the elevator together and being all, you know, who's the alpha male in the room? It's interesting. That's for sure. I mean, they're both actually quite charismatic. John Hawkes, who plays Paget, I think he's a super charismatic guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got terrific screen presence, and it is. I mean, obviously, you're never going to keep up to Mulder level of hotness on any day, but
no one can.
He kind of holds his own in that scene. It's interesting because it's just kind of, you know, Mulder's trying to be the tough guy a little bit. He's trying to, you know, give off that vibe slightly because he just is. And Paget's just kind of like, whatever, dude, you don't threaten me. I don't even have to try. That's kind of the impression I get from him.
Right. And I think that's so interesting that you bring that up, because he's very confident. Like, he's very sure of himself, that he has read her completely correctly.
Yeah.
That this is completely going to go his way, you know? Yeah. And, and when he finds out that, hey, no, this isn't going to go that way, he's almost like heartbroken. Like, I don't want to say that, but it's kind of sad. Like, you're like,
I feel kind of sad for him.
Yeah, you're like, oh, poor little stalker guy.
poor little stalker. I mean, he, to his credit, now he's having the same effect on me as he had on Scully, because I'm going to defend him right now. He does act very stalkerish. It's very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But at no point does Scully say, leave me alone, go away. I mean, she kind of...
Well, she says, I don't care to know you, or she says something like that.
But then she keeps coming back to his place when she doesn't have to. She sits down and has a cup of coffee in his bedroom.
One of my favorite moments in the entire episode is when she's walking to Mulder's door and you close it on the typewriter and it says the compulsion was overwhelming. And then she turns around. I think that was so great. Like, I loved it. It was like, that's exactly what it is. It's just this curiosity, this morbid curiosity. Yeah. And
she can't seem to stay away. So I think that he's less creepy in the sense that she really is giving him sort of mixed messages. So there's every reason for him to believe she might be interested in him, because she is acting that way. I mean, obviously she's got mixed feelings, but they are mixed feelings, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has every reason to think that there could be something there. And of course, you know, as soon as he figures out, oh, wait a second, there's another person in this situation that she's interested in. As soon as he figures that out, he really does kind of back off. And
you're right.
He does seem to get it.
Because I think he's at the end of the day, the guy's a romantic.
Yeah.
That kind of is his downfall.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, while he is very sort of creepy and stalkerish, as soon as he realizes that Scully's not interested in him, and of course she never actually comes right out and says that to him because she's still kind of confused by the whole situation, I think he kind of figures it out for himself, just as we, the viewers, have had to figure out exactly what's going on with Mulder and Scully by just kind of reading the cues.
But you know what I wanted to say, what I love about that is that it's... And this, again, it goes back to, and we're going to talk about how meta this episode is.
Yes.
It's so subtle, that moment where all she does is reach out. All she does is reach out and touch his arm.
Yeah.
And his eye just goes, boom, like looks at it and goes.
Laser focus.
Shit. This is not. You know, and it makes me laugh so much because it's barely anything and he gets it. Like, everybody watching gets it, but they don't get it. And you know what I mean? It's like, it's so fantastic. And I love that moment. It's so good.
Yeah, like literally everybody gets this.
Right.
Except for Mulder and Scully. So how about that line where he says, Agent Scully is already in love? I mean, that's pretty on the nail kind of stuff. We don't get that very often on the X-Files.
No, and it even more frustrating is that it's never addressed again.
Of course it's not. It was too good to last.
I know. But again, I often remind people, hey, Chris Carter wrote that guys.
Exactly.
And this is kind of the crux of this for me. And this is kind of why I love this episode so much, is because I feel like this episode is about these writers. You know, they have put these characters into existence, and they sort of take on a life of their own, which is kind of what's going on, obviously, with our Monster of the Week and our killer. But it has happened on this show as well.
Absolutely.
Six seasons in, this is Chris Carter. I truly believe this. This is Chris Carter throwing his hands up and saying, I've lost control of these characters.
Yep.
Here you go. I have no control over this anymore.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's one of the things I actually like about this episode. It's one of the things that first sort of drew me to it, is when it occurred to me that that's what was going on in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, you've got Padgett talking very directly about the not being able to control the characters, and the characters choosing the writer, and the characters directing the writer. And I think he says it's difficult to say who's in charge. And yeah, to me, that's very much Chris Carter saying, yeah, I give up. Like, it's they're in love, and it wasn't my idea, but this is happening. And I'm not sure he's totally happy about it. I'm not sure that I take from that episode.
No, he's not. He is Padgett.
He's not happy about this. He's he's Padgett, and his creation is going around killing things. But not in this case, it's worse. His creations are going around being in love.
Yeah.
And he can hardly stand it, but it, it's happening. And I didn't want it to happen, but these characters are taking on a life of their own. They have become real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Frank Spotnitz said about the episode himself. I listened to a really interesting conversation with him on our friends over on the XCast podcast. They had a terrific interview with Frank Spotnitz, and in it he says how the episode is very much about how much he obsessed on these characters over the years, and how for him they became real in a sense.
Well, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, right. So they're just kind of
it's sort of
and we all know what it's like to obsess over Mulder and Scully. So I mean, that's why Frank Spotnitz is so great, right? I think he has a special place in the heart of a lot of X-File fans.
Yeah.
And it's because he did obsess over the characters as much as we did.
Well, it's, and it's like, it's episodes like this that, you know, are written with such care and love for this fictional television show, you know what I mean? And treating the characters very delicately. I think that they did that. They did that here.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing I wanted to say about how Scully is portrayed in the episode, because I know that there's been some conversation about this relatively recently on Twitter, because everyone of these guys seems to be discovering Malagra around the same time that we are. And there was a theory posited, and actually I think this actually was posited back in the day as well, I just kind of forgot it, that Padgett is controlling Scully as well as controlling his character. And honestly, that never occurred to me while I was watching the episode. And I sort of watched it again with that theory in the back of my mind. Like, does he have the ability to control Scully in some fashion? Like you say, this compulsion where he writes about the compulsion.
Oh, like as part of his power or whatever.
Yes,
he can imagine how she behaves too.
Yep.
I don't necessarily subscribe to that. And I'll tell you why, because I think if he could, he would have her fall in love with him.
Yeah, it would have worked a lot better.
Right. I don't think that's as interesting, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. That actually never occurred to me before.
It hadn't occurred to me either until you brought it up.
Yeah, but I know that there are a few folks that kind of subscribe to that. But I think there's a tendency maybe when someone acts in a way that when a character acts in a way that you're not expecting, you almost want to find a way to kind of write that off.
Yeah.
So that if it's an aspect of their character that maybe you're uncomfortable with, or that it's hard to understand, then you just want to say, well, you know, he was controlling her. But, you know, Padgett's not Pusher.
No.
She's making her own choices here. I think he's a manipulative person in a sense that he's, not even manipulative. I don't think he's doing it on purpose. But I think that he just has a way about him that has an effect on Scully in particular. But I don't think that there's anything paranormal about it.
I do, actually. I mean, obviously, right. He's murdering people with his fictional characters, so there is something paranormal about it.
Is, well, oh, absolutely.
Oh,
just,
okay.
Absolutely.
You mean not in relation to Scully?
Just not in relation to Scully.
No, I mean, I think that she's a victim of this by circumstance, that the fact that she's the one that he's chosen to stalk. But, like, I don't think that there's any actual control, like mind control or anything going on.
I don't think so.
No, but I think you're absolutely right. I think that's what people do when they want it to, they want to believe. So they they fan wank it to make it fit. Like, you know, and again, you know, we were talking more about her portrayal in this episode. I mean, I know they did a lot of close-up shots of, like, her eyes and her lips, and maybe people have a problem with, like, hey, guess what? Scully's a woman and she's beautiful and she's got this stuff going on that we all aren't aware of. You know, and it's interesting because I don't think I was trying to rack my brain. And I know this is by design through Chris Carter, and I appreciate it, even the fact that Jillian is gorgeous. They don't ever portray her character that way because
they don't have to.
You know what I mean? And I think other than, like, back in season one, I think it was season one when Frohickey referred to her as hot. And that's just Frohickey.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever overtly addressed that, like, her looks before. And I especially now, it seems so timely that this episode is so sensitive to that, actually. The idea that, hey, look, we're going to acknowledge this as a reality, but at the same time, she's not down with being, you know, observed that way and thought of that way. And this is probably something she thinks about a lot.
And that's
absolutely why she's unnerved by this guy kind of pointing this out. And so I applaud them for that, especially being well ahead of their time.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I mean, the way that when Padgett is doing kind of, you know, reading his writing while we see Scully.
Right.
The way she's shot is in a very sort of sexual way. It makes me wonder if we're even meant to believe those shots of her. Like, for example, when she's on the phone with Mulder and discovers the Milagro in the envelope. And there's, you know, a shot where we get, you know, some narration from Padgett. And it's a very sort of sexual kind of way that she's portrayed by the camera. I almost wonder, did she actually act that way in reality? Did Scully act that way, or did Padgett imagine her acting that way?
I certainly think that it was a combination of both, but, like, we obviously get the shot of her, like, in the bed with him, which we know is, like, in his mind or at least on his pages. I don't think that, like, she would be. That's how he imagines her to be. So I feel like maybe, and again, it's over dramatized. Yeah. I don't know how to say that, but the way that the camera kind of, like, you know, swings around her and she's, like, putting the hair behind her ear. Like, obviously that's all supposed to be, it's all intentional. Like, this is how we're supposed to be viewing her right now because this is what's going on. So, I don't know. That's a good point. Like, I don't know. Was she actually doing all of those things?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Because she seems to be acting a little differently than she normally does. She's just slightly, like, the sexiness is just amped up a tiny bit.
And
it makes me think that that's just how, it's like you say, that there's a combination going on of, you know, we as the viewers do know that this happened within the context of the episode. But then with the sort of Padgett narration, that kind of takes it into a slightly different place where it's, I don't know, like a hyper realism or let's call it a sexy realism. I'm just going to coin the phrase sexy realism. It's like magic realism, but sexy.
I like it.
So I think that it kind of just gives it a different vibe. That's, we're not necessarily meant to take it at face value the way we are the rest of the episode. But then again, that's a very different style for the X-Files, generally speaking. Usually we can kind of believe the things that were shown on screen as happening, at least from the point of view of the characters on screen.
Right.
But in this case, I think that we are seeing it from the point of view of a character off screen.
Right.
Which would be Padgett and his writing, and not from anyone in the room, and not from really a realistic perspective. So
it's
very,
like,
different.
Whenever we hear him speaking or reading his book, I think we cannot necessarily trust anything that we're seeing on screen. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe if people aren't quite picking up on that or you know, subscribing to that idea, then I can see how people might think it is out of character. At least scenes like that. But yeah. I think that's exactly what's going on, is it's being hyper sexified. What'd you say?
It's sexy realism.
Sexy realism. Sorry. I combined two the wrong words. Sexy
that's
realism.
Okay. I'm glad we're recording this, because I'm going to forget that probably by tomorrow. So I'll have to listen back to remind myself what I called it. So.
Yeah, I love it.
And if you're not really sort of paying close attention, or if you're not picking up on that particular method, then yeah, you might think it's really weird and out of character that she's acting that way, when in reality she's not acting that way.
Right.
Patch's just imagining her acting that way, and it's being shown to us through his eyes.
Exactly.
Which are clearly not, he's clearly not a reliable narrator when it comes to Scully. That's made quite clear, I think. Although he's obviously right about quite a few things about her.
He's right about her, but it's exactly what you're saying. It's her, but it's a sexy realism version of her. You know, that's what it is. It's her heightened.
It is. Particularly in a very sexual way.
Right.
And he obviously can connect with her on a certain sort of emotional level at the same time when he's talking to her, especially when he's talking about loneliness and that sort of thing. And Scully says, loneliness is a choice, which is a pretty famous line, I think, from this episode.
Yeah.
I would hear that line talked amongst the fandom from time to time. And I, for the longest time, did not know what episode it was from. And then I was like, oh, that's what that's from.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting idea. What do you think she's getting at with that statement?
I think she's defensive. I think she is lonely, and she's trying to say, hey, this is how I want to be. This is my, this is how I'm choosing to be.
Right.
Which I think is pretty much clearly shot to shit in the next scene when she says, I'm not that lonely. It's like she about faces pretty quickly. She's like, we're going to backtrack.
Yeah.
Because I think she realizes that, hey, you know what? This isn't going to fly. Like, that doesn't, nobody believes that. But I'm not saying that it's not true, because I do think that the phrase loneliness is a choice is so, I think, pertinent to Mulder and Scully, because it's the same thing that we're talking about. Like, hey, we're 6 years in, and these people are choosing to not take that step for whatever reason.
Exactly right. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way until I think maybe last night on who knows my millionth watch of Milagro, that I realized loneliness as a choice can apply to Mulder and Scully's relationship, of course, because they could be together. Paget's figured it out. We have all figured it out.
Right.
But they're choosing to live these kind of lonely lives.
Yeah.
I always kind of got the impression that when Scully says loneliness is a choice, that she's saying maybe, I feel like she's denying right there that she's lonely by saying, well, yes, maybe I'm alone, but I'm not lonely. I'm not sure exactly how to take that statement.
Or she's saying kind of like what I was saying, is like she's saying, hey, this is what I'm choosing, but it's fine. Like,
yeah, it's
why
okay
is that
lonely.
A bad thing? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That's kind of how I read it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It feels like one of those lines that feels really important, and I don't quite get it, but it's one of those lines that can be interpreted in many different ways, I think.
Yeah, I agree
and
with
it's,
that.
I mean, and loneliness is kind of, you know, a theme certainly between Paget and Scully in their conversation in that apartment, which is such an interesting conversation. And they talk about so many different sort of elements that we see throughout this episode, like the question of, like, she talks to him in the church and in his apartment about, you think you know me, but you don't really know me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
We know she's lying again. Because later on in the apartment, she actually says to him, okay, well, if you know me so well, why am I staying? And I don't feel like she's being, like, sarcastic there. I think she genuinely wants him to explain herself to herself.
I agree with you completely. And I think it's clear also that she knows he's hit the nail on the head when they're in the church and she's crying. Like, she's like, you can see these tears welling up in her eyes, and you're just like, wait, like, this guy's full of shit. And then as you're watching her, you're like, oh, he's not full of shit. And she knows it. Like, and it's really, it's very effective. It's again, it's one of those really kind of subtle, effective choices.
Yeah. You can really, you can tell by her reaction. It's all in her reaction. She says so much throughout this episode without having to say anything. I mean, it's a brilliant, one of her best, I think, one of Jillian's best. I'm a real fan of wordless acting, and she's so good at that.
Yeah. Oh, and she's the best.
In the church scene, in the apartment scene, as we've talked about, she's just like, she's conveying so many different things at the same time. It's just, it's really amazing to watch.
It really is. And it's so subtle, like you don't even notice it. That's what's so great about her in general.
That is. Yeah, yeah. Like I think back on the scene, I imagine Scully saying a lot more than she actually does say, because she says so much with her body language and her facial expressions.
Totally.
And it's so interesting about that, you know, Padgett talks a lot about motive and, you know, about describing motives to Scully, and Scully asking him, you know, why am I here? And him saying, what does he say? Something like motive is hard, that it's hard to understand motives.
Or so, you know, only like, occurs to one after the fact, I think is what he says.
Yeah, after the fact, exactly. And it's interesting because the idea of sort of characters and their motives runs through the whole episode, because we talk about Scully and her motives in that scene. And of course, Padgett and his character talk a lot about motive. He's struggling with his character's motives. Why does he do the things he does? Why is he killing people?
Right.
And Mulder and Scully talk quite a lot, more than I think they usually do, about what's the motive of the killer. Like right from the sort of first scene when they're talking in Mulder's apartment about the case, Scully right from the get-go is saying, well, you know, we have to figure out his motive and then we'll figure out the killer.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting theme running through the episode about understanding motive and how that helps you to understand people. But everyone struggles. Everyone struggles to understand motive. You know, Mulder and Scully struggle to understand the motive of the killer. Padgett struggles to understand the motive of his own character.
Yeah.
I'm still a little murky on the X-File here about exactly who is controlling what. I mean, you were talking about, you know, Padgett he's a killer, but is he? I mean, I never quite understand the degree to which he's actually in control of this character who comes to life.
Yeah.
Because there is this idea that we can't control characters. And so to what degree is Padgett responsible for these murders, I guess is the question.
Well, I think he's completely responsible, because we know that this, we know there are dead bodies, first of all.
Yes, there are definitely dead bodies.
Yeah, and we know that this person, or I should say character, who's killing the people, comes to life essentially as he puts these words onto the page.
Right.
And so he's doing it, like, for whatever reason, you know, it's a fucking X-File. He's putting it out there. He's able to make this guy go do this thing. Is he doing it on purpose? No. I mean, he's trying to say, look, I'm just imagining it, like, I'm not killing anybody. But he also doesn't seem to have a great deal of remorse. Like, he doesn't seem to really care that this guy's out killing. Like, because, I mean, I think in the end of it all, he's just doing it for her. He's just doing it so that he can meet her or be with her or whatever. But I mean, the X-File itself, I think, is just this whole, I don't want to say psychic surgery, because, I mean, Mulder, he always gets to be right. So shut up, Mulder.
Well, of course. But, and he is right, of course.
I know.
Yeah, I always struggled a little bit with Padgett's culpability.
Yeah.
The degree to which he's responsible for the murders. But I think you've really nailed it, that he's not necessarily trying to make them happen, but he doesn't care that they are.
Right. It's like the guy says at the end, the killer, or Ken Nascimento, or whatever his name is, he says this isn't the reason, it's just an excuse. It's like, look, I'm just killing these people. It's like as an excuse to meet her, but it's not, I'm not killing them. Like, I don't actually have a reason to be killing them. You know what I mean? And again, I think that's probably in the end his sort of fatal flaw as a character. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. And
go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, I'm really interested in this idea as well, that that his, I can never remember his character's name or pronounce it, so I just keep calling him his character. His character says, you know, something about there can only be one ending if it's to be perfect. And Paget says she dies. And he does look really quite heartbroken about that, actually.
Right.
And I find that a really, that's like a really compelling line to me, this idea, remembering that this is kind of a meta episode where the writers are expressing a lot about their innermost feelings. And it makes me wonder if on some level, is this the perfect ending to the X-Files, that Scully would die? Is that the idea that they always kind of wanted to have? I don't know. I'm intrigued by that concept. I'm not sure exactly why she has to die for it to be a perfect ending for Paget, but
I'm not going to be drawn into a conversation about Scully dying being their intent. Not going to happen. Draw me into that conversation.
All right. Okay.
I don't believe it. But
all right.
What I think is going on in this particular episode is the fact that once he finds out he can never be with her.
Yeah.
She can't be with anyone then. It's that.
So
in his mind, the only way to end this particular story is for her to die.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I see where you're going. And that is a little bit more like there's a bit more malice behind that than if, you know, these things are just happening and he can't help it. If at some point he just decides, well, like you say, if I can't have her, no one can. That's a pretty sinister thing at that point.
Oh, completely. But keep in mind, while that's perfectly appropriate and right for a fictional story, and it's probably true, it probably is the only way this particular story should end if it were to end his way. Mm. You keep in mind that he does save her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is what kind of makes this story more interesting. I mean, obviously, we know Scully's not going to die. But I mean, in this episode, I should be specific.
This episode,
we know this is not where we lose Scully. Like, this isn't going to happen here. But like, it's nice the fact that they get, again, it's like they continue to bring up this idea of this monster with pathos that Mulder actually talks about way later in season 11, very recently when he starts to talk about that. And it was just it's a really interesting concept. I mean, I know this has been a theme on the X-Files forever, but it was, when I say it's the first time we talk about it, it's the first time Mulder really sort of mentions it. And again, and I'm going to bring this all back full circle here, because he's referring to who ends up ultimately being William. I'm talking to the episode about the episode Ghoulie. And when I watch Milagro, and again, everything to me ties back into everything, as much as people hate the way I'm about to talk about the finale of the series right now. So if you haven't seen it or don't want to be spoiled, just turn off.
If it will trigger you in some fashion.
Yeah, I know. People
just guard your ears.
What I'm going to say might trigger people, but like, I have always, I'm one of the very few people, and as much as I'm icked out by what they did with William in terms of his paternity, and we don't need to discuss that, I never thought that him dying was a bad choice for an ending. I never thought that. I actually thought, in the same way that Paget says, you know, this is only one way this is going to end. As soon as I knew what was going on with William, especially when I was watching, you know, My Struggle 4, I was like, this kid has no way out. Like, there's only one way for this to end. And so it was also one of those reasons why, again, the whole Smoking Man bullshit notwithstanding, one of the reasons why I was like, why is everyone giving Scully so much grief about trying to let this go? Let the woman let this go. Like, you know what I mean? And it's one of those things that I'm just like, it's very sad and it's very tragic, but in a way it's like the ultimate X-File. It's kind of the way the story is meant to end. And I know I'm getting off topic. I realize that, but when I think about this episode, Milagro, it really makes me think of the whole series and the way it's written and the way these stories are told and the way these characters are treated. And I think of that a lot when I watch this episode now after having seen the end. That makes it goes, there really is only one way for this story to end. And in this case, hey, we got a slightly different ending because we have the luxury of the author being here as a character who can do that.
Thank goodness for that.
Exactly. But I do, you know, again, sorry to go off the tangent. I'm untriggering everyone, but that's kind of how I think about how they ended William, and how I was, in a weird way, even though he's not dead, but even though they think he is, apparently, I felt like that was, in a way, kind of appropriate for this story. So
I don't disagree with you. I think that, I mean, I don't want to go off on too big a tangent either, but I think that sometimes characters need to die at the end of stories for the story to work.
Right.
And it's okay, and it's sad at the time, but then you look back on it. I mean, I'm just going to say, I don't want to upset anyone, but a friend of mine asked me before the end of season 11, she was just a casual fan, but she said, how do you think it should end? And before I knew what was coming out of my mouth, I said, everyone should die. And I don't know why I said that, but part of me felt like everyone should die. I remember back in the day, like online, on the news groups, and I don't know what season we were on. It was still relatively early on, I think. Someone saying that's how the series should end. At some point, Mulder and Scully need to die saving the world in some fashion, and that should be the end. And I honestly wouldn't object to that, although I know we're getting a little off track. Although there is that subject in Milagro about a character's death being the perfect ending. So I honestly have no problem with it, but I know that I am in a small minority on that.
No. And I mean, again, if it were like, hey, it was the true ending of the show, I guess I don't like that idea, just because quite frankly, I don't trust them to make it good enough, because like, I don't think if Skinner's dead, I don't think it was good enough. If Monica's dead, I don't think it was good enough. The lone gunman, that's certainly not good enough. No. Like nobody got this heroic worthy death on this show. Yeah. It's never been done.
Right.
The only one, ironically, that it was done for was William. And he's not even dead.
And he's not even dead.
So, I agree. I guess I see what you're saying, but like, I feel like in a weird way, I don't like the idea of them dying, because I think that this show is half tragedy. I have always thought that. And so when people are like, I hate this show because they should have been reunited with William and they should ride off into the sunset, I don't think those people are watching the right show.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
say that?
No. Yeah, and I
so,
agree.
And so, yeah, and so the fact that there was this sort of tragic ending for William didn't really bother me. I mean, a lot of the things leading up to it bother me. But, like, yeah, I don't like the idea that Mulder and Scully, like, our heroes, would end up dead. Yeah. Because, to me, that's just a full-on tragedy. And in the end, these are our heroes. It's a different kind of show. Like, you don't want that. I don't know. I think that would be too sad. I think that would
it
be
would
too
be
sad.
Very, it would be very sad. Like, you're right. And you're absolutely right. When it comes to how they've dealt with character death, they have blown it time and again. There
they
hasn't
blow
been
it.
A good one. And except, of course, for William.
Except for William.
And maybe, I mean, the cigarette smoking man has had some spectacular deaths, but none of them have been real either. They do great with fake deaths.
Yeah.
They do not do well with real deaths, may be real deaths.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
It's like when push comes to shove, they just seem to kind of, again, as the Brits would say, they'd kind of bottle it. They just kind of lose their nerve and can't seem to follow through with a decent ending.
Yeah.
Probably I do not want to leave that in their hands.
Yeah, that's my main problem with that, is I just don't think they would handle it right, which is like I say, a lot of the X-Files, I'm kind of fine with the content. I'm just not a big fan of the way they handle it or the way they execute it.
Yeah.
Which I think is can be applied to many things, but a lot of the more recent stuff I can say. But.
Sure. But getting back to Milagro for a
second,
this takes us back to Milagro nicely, because what's interesting to me is lots of things, obviously, but in that final scene where Scully's been attacked and Mulder figures it out, runs back. I mean, first of all, can we talk about the look on his face as he walks in the door? He's just like so scared and shocked and afraid. And I wonder if at that moment, Scully actually does appear that maybe briefly she's actually dead. Because she sure looks dead for just a second there.
Yeah.
And it's almost like she kind of like comes back to life. And the question that I was left with, and I think there's more than one way to answer this, is how does she come back to life? Is it because Padgett burns the book and destroys the character of the killer? Or is it more directly to do with, we see Padgett rip his heart out and he appears to have saved Scully in that fashion? I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but it's clearly something.
I think, like many things on the X-Files, it's up for interpretation, because they have all these things happening simultaneously. Like, they have the book being burned. They have Padgett down there ripping his heart out. They have Mulder touching her. Which I don't, I don't remember exactly when he touches her in relation to when she wakes up. I think maybe he touches her after she wakes up. I actually don't remember. But the fact that he's there, like if he weren't there, what would anything have been different? You know, So, it's a really good question and I think worthy of exploration. I think that my interpretation of it is that the book burnt. As soon as those particular words were cast to the wind, they are no longer the truth, and reality has now been shifted.
Restored,
I should say. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's happening, and the idea of her, waking up and she's terrified.
Yeah.
How do you interpret that? Like, does she think that it's Does she not? She kind of doesn't know what's going on, but she just knows. Yeah. Oh, thank God, it's Mulder. How do you read that?
I'm really curious about that, actually, because I mean that whole scene I find super compelling. It's one of my favorite MSR scenes because I love the angst.
Yeah.
And it's angst up the yin yang in this one. It's qualitatively different than, because we've had lots of Mulder comforting Scully scenes, and I love them all. Do not get me wrong, but there's something a little different about this one. That Scully just seems, what is that? It's like she wakes up from a nightmare or something. She doesn't seem to quite know where she is, which is what makes me think she actually was like literally dead, perhaps for just a second, because there's something different about the way she reacts. Because when she kind of comes back. The way she embraces Mulder and just, she's clawing at him and it's just this raw emotion, this kind of visceral reaction that we really don't see from her perhaps ever otherwise.
First,
and it's quite unique.
It is completely. I was going to actually, I have something to say about that really quickly. I just had a thought. Maybe you're right, and she did die and then came back to life, and maybe this is what Clyde Bruckman saw.
Holy shit, you could be right about that.
I just fucking figured it out. And he says, you don't. Mortal. He says, you don't, because I thought you were dead, but you're not dead.
Yeah. And there it is. I suppose it would freak you out if you were dead and then suddenly you weren't.
Yeah. There
so
you go.
I think you're definitely onto something there.
I just fan wanked it for myself, and I'm no longer afraid that she's super, really immortal. I don't like the idea that she's immortal. But my other thing I was going to say is, you said this was, we have a lot of Mulder, comforting Scully scenes. I would be interested to kind of tally that, because I think we have a lot.
I could probably listen for you right now, but I won't.
Yeah, don't do that. But I wanted to say that I found a lot of parallels between this episode and season 2 Irresistible, because it was very similar in the fact that it's like Scully kind of learning something about herself that maybe she wasn't even aware of, and then and trying to kind of keep it at bay for the entire episode, and then finally just having a breakdown at the end in the presence of Mulder, and I thought that this episode really made me think of that one a lot when I was watching it very recently. And it's cool because I like when they do that, because that to me is like what keeps it in character. Although we can look at the two scenes side by side and be like, look to see how their relationship has progressed.
That's a really interesting parallel, actually. And of course I love Irresistible as well.
Oh yeah. It's a fantastic one.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because you can definitely see that kind of, like you say, the sort of self-awareness that's just under the surface with Scully, and this sort of struggle that she's having and the emotions that she's having that she keeps just under the surface, and then they just all come out at the end, but only because Mulder's there.
Right.
And he seems to be the one that kind of triggers that kind of ability for her to really get in touch with those feelings and to express them.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy, do they ever come out in this one? And I do love that. Were you going to say something about fanfic that we didn't cover already?
No, I think it was when I was talking about Chris Carter's prose.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Speaking of that, though, actually, nice transition. I did want to say, like, the very, very last voiceover, which to me I thought was the most blatant thing they've ever done in regards to MSR. The only thing that's weird about this is just the timing of the episode, because it's like you would feel this episode's very important. I feel like that you'd think, hey, this might be the episode that finally changes things, that finally makes them change. And I think it does, but just more subtly than we would like. You know, like at the very, very end, like the last sentence, he says, I'm pulling up the script here, and yet reflected back upon him at last, he could see his own ending, and in this final act of destruction, a chance to give what he could not receive. And to me, that's so obviously saying, hey, I'm not going to get your love, so I'm giving you a chance to have it with someone else.
Yeah,
Is that how you're reading that? Because that's how I read it.
That is how I read it. That's my preferred reading of it. I remember the first few times I watched it, I read it more just as a simple, he knows that Scully doesn't love him, but he loves her. And so he's giving love to her, by saving her, even though he knows she does not love him. So he's just sacrificing himself.
But
I do like the idea that he's allowing her to go on and love someone else. So in the end, he doesn't want her to die. He wants her to live, and he's okay with that if that's with Mulder. He seems, you know, surprisingly okay with that.
Right. And at the end, his whole pathos is what I was referring to earlier, was the fact that he finds out he's a destroyer rather than a creator, but he's able to create something. So in a way, I like the idea that I'm not just saving your life because I didn't create you. But I'm creating the start of this new MSR that we're seeing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like, as far as MSR episodes go, I think Milagro was underrated for quite a long time and still is a bit.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, for our shippers, there's a lot going on in this episode that is like MSR to the max. There's a lot of different elements.
It should be noted, and again, this is probably all production bullshit and doesn't mean anything, but that the episode right after this is The Unnatural, which might be their most flirty MSR episode ever.
Nope. Yeah, boy,
I mean, take out
good times.
Yeah, take out some of the season 11 stuff, and it might be. Yeah. And so I bet you, and I wasn't watching the show at this time, I didn't tune in until after season 6, but like, I bet you everybody was as confused moving ahead as I was when I was watching season 11, and I'm like, wait, they just slept together, but what's happening? Wait, they were doing all this flirty stuff, but she's weirded out by sharing a motel room with him. Like, you know, and again, this is the way the show has always been. So I'm watching and I'm laughing at my own confusion. But it was just the meaning in this episode, I feel like, is sort of diminished by the idea that they don't really get together. I know a lot of people subscribe to the fact that maybe they do, and they're already sleeping together, and I don't believe that for a second, because if anyone tells me that Millennium is not their first kiss, they are wrong. So I'm sorry, but I will die on this hill. But I definitely think that things have changed, you know, like maybe they're aware now. Hey, maybe there's something here. And you know, it's not very, very long after this that Mulder finally does make that move. So it does change them. They just move in baby steps, and they move like snails, which is what they do.
Yeah. But, you know, snails are, you got to love the snail pace if you're a shipper, if you're an X-Files fan. I mean, it's not, for me, the snail's pace is not something I have to endure. It's part of the appeal, I think. The snail's pace is just, you know, the little things just mean so much. And I mean, I think that back in the day because I was watching this when it aired, my head was exploding with how much MSR we were getting at this point, and it was almost too much for me.
Right.
And so when we did go back to, you know, them acting a little bit more like they would before, that just felt much more normal. And I'm like, okay, this I can get behind.
Right.
But like, whoa, ho. There's just too much flirting happening here. My head cannot compute it.
Yeah.
So it was hard to get used to. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Milagro just didn't quite click with me the first time. But, you know, now that we've seen all the seasons, we know how it all ends up, and we know that there's lots of good stuff to come, MSR-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I can handle it now. I couldn't quite handle it at the time, I think.
I hear you. I mean, that's like what we're talking about with the slow burn. I mean, with them, like, that's just kind of the way they roll. Like, with them, and this is just me and my, you know, own headcanon, but I think with them, it was just slow to the point of madness. Like, I think it was just like slow until they were finally like, okay, we're having sex. Like, I seriously think that's what happened. Like, they didn't have the whole, hey, let's go out on a date, let's try. Like, they didn't do that. Like, I don't think that's what happened here, which makes sense for them, I think.
Absolutely. No, it makes total sense because they, you know, their relationship was well beyond that point at that stage of the game because it had been so long in coming. So, yeah, no, it totally makes sense to me that that's the arc that their relationship took. So how do you assess Milagro overall as an episode compared to sort of all the other episodes? Would you rank it highly?
Very highly.
Yeah, yeah.
Very highly. I mean, it's definitely among my favorites. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I might not have said that even a year ago. So,
yeah. No. Yeah. I'm with you, actually. Yeah. I think it really does benefit from additional watchings. There's certain episodes that not only can you enjoy them multiple times, they actually get better. And you can easily go from not liking them to liking them the more you watch them. And I think Milagro is one of those episodes. And you just have to kind of take it on its own terms and not expect it to be like a typical X-Files episode necessarily. Mm-hmm. But when you kind of say, okay, this is Milagro, this is something a little different. Let's work with what we've got here. Let's enjoy what we're given. Then you start to really see how amazing it is.
Yeah.
And how it's a really well executed episode on a lot of different levels. The writing, the production, the acting. Mm-hmm. I think it's right up there, really. It's a very different episode, but I think it's very effective. In my mind, I compare it a little bit with All Things, which I would also say again is a very different style of episode, but it doesn't grab me, to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of that. I know I'm probably in the minority on that one too, but that's another sort of Scully-centric episode that's a little bit of a different pace.
Right.
But for me, the way they executed in Milagro, I like it a lot better. And
I think it might
be my favorite sort of Scully-centric episode.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said. I think I like All Things, but I would definitely say that I think where All Things suffers is that it doesn't feel like an X-Files episode. Like, I think Jillian did a great job with writing and directing like an hour long episode of television, but maybe not an episode of the X-Files. Whereas I feel like this one feels like an episode of the X-Files. It's just kind of a different episode of the X-Files.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got a good X-File at the heart of it. That's a scary ass story. There's some scary stuff.
Maybe that's
going
the
on
main.
In this episode.
Maybe that's the main reason. Is like, I think I look at All Things as might be the only episode in the entire run of the series that does not have an X-File. You know, and again, I actually really enjoy watching it, and it's definitely one that I will rewatch over and over because I think Jillian's great in it, and I really enjoy it. It's entertaining to watch, but it's not like I don't think of it as like, hey, that's a great X-File, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
And again, as much as I love the MSR, and I think that that episode has great MSR, it's hard for me to like, you know, pick it as like a favorite because of that. So anyway, but that's a different conversation. But I think this is great. I wanted to bring up one more thing, and that was the fact that this church that they're in, did you have any sort of flashback to Nothing Lasts Forever? Because I'm watching this now and I'm like, that looks like the same church. It looks like the same candles and all.
I don't know. I mean, the candles certainly were reminiscent of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the architecture felt the same to me. I'll have to have another look at the Nothing Lasts Forever church. I got the impression looking at this one, and I'm just looking at it through the eyes of the fact that my husband is a pastor, so I've been in a few churches.
Mm-hmm.
And my impression, and I'll have to get my husband to weigh in on this, it doesn't look like a Catholic church to me that she's in. It's supposed to obviously be a Catholic church because you wouldn't have a picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus anywhere else. But the architecture looks to me like a Protestant church, whereas the architecture in Nothing Lasts Forever looks more like a Catholic church, but I would have to compare them more directly.
Interesting. I mean, and keep in mind too, in Nothing Lasts Forever, we're in two different churches. So, but there's obviously one like in DC that she goes to. And so in my mind, like maybe in my head can't, or in the actual canon of the show, this is supposed to be the same church because
yeah.
it's the one.
It would
one,
be interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, even though it may not look exactly the same, like my brain couldn't help but go there and think of the symbolism of that happening all these years later.
I definitely thought of that when, you could see sort of the votive candles in the background.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'll never be able to look at votive candles and think of anything but nothing less for the rest of my life, quite frankly.
It's true.
But it is an interesting, I mean, I don't think it's an intentional parallel necessarily.
No,
but
not
it's
at all.
But it's there for sure.
I'm not saying that it was intentional in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying it was reminiscent, and I mean, just in pure story, The idea that this is the church she goes to or the church that she drops in every now and then makes sense to me that it would still be the same church all these years later. They still live in the same place.
I hadn't thought of that, but I like that idea, actually. Yeah. That would be kind of cool. And anyway. I like anything that kind of, gives us a sense of the length of these people's lives and how, the things that happen at one point in their lives affect something many, many years later, because that's how life works.
Sometimes, this is just the realism.
Sometimes it takes
up.
A long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, yeah, I like that idea. That's going to be part of my headcanon now.
I like it, too.
Well, I've chosen that.
We've now gone well over an hour talking about Milagro, which I'm actually surprised and pleased by, because you never know.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to add?
Well, I mean, I could probably talk about it for another hour, but that's okay. if folks have not really gotten behind Milagro, my advice just would be to kind of just watch it another time or two, maybe. And like I say, just sort of take it as it is and try not to be too thrown by the odd stuff. Just let it wash over you. And don't bring too much to it in terms of expectations, and it'll do magical things for you.
Yeah, I agree. My advice would be to watch it with the captions on. That would be my advice.
Why? What's with the captions?
Because, like I said, I think that this episode plays better on the page.
I got you now. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of great dialogue in it.
Yeah. I think you can appreciate it in a different way, especially if you've watched it multiple times. I think you can appreciate it in a different way with the words in front of you. So
it is an interesting script to read. I mean, I don't know. I've not actually read like a real script, but I've read a transcript of the episode.
Yeah.
And it does make for good reading. It is the dialogue is really well written and interesting to read. So, yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
Well, thanks, you guys, for listening. If you have anything to say, please let us know on Twitter, or you can email us xfilesdiaries@gmail.com. You could tweet at us at xfdpodcast on Twitter, and we will definitely talk to you there. Let us know what you think. I mean, honestly, I would be really curious to just have maybe when we release this episode, we'll do a poll or something about people who, if you like this episode or you do not like this episode. I'm really, curious to hear what people think. Anyway.
Yeah, I think people have quite interesting opinions about this episode.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks for listening, you guys. And we will be back with you next time on another episode of X-Files Diaries.